I'm sorry, are you saying meow?
Am I saying meow?
Okay, I'm stretching.
Oh, that's exciting.
Gotta limber up.
Yes, those podcasting muscles.
It's very physically exhausting, mm-hmm. recording a podcast.
You need stamina for podcasting.
It's about all I have stamina for anymore.
Yeah, plus one to stamina.
Plus what?
Plus one. Never mind.
Did you just make a D&D joke?
Potentially.
Yeah. You're a very strange kind of nerd.
Yes. Well, yes. Aren't all nerds inherently strange by default?
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I thought the idea was that nerds have...
You're a normal nerd?
In common with nerds. No. I just thought nerds had things in common with other nerds, but I'm slowly learning that we have many things not in common. There's probably a word for that.
I think you mean unique people that are not...
we are literally unique people.
Yeah. We're not those nerds that all loved X-Files and can't hardly wait, no. But...
Yeah, I can't grow my hair that long.
Ugh, God.
Well, I got the curly fro thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mine's just wavy.
Just wavy?
Yeah. It's a little long right now, actually, as a matter of fact, so I need to get a haircut. But yeah, just annoyingly wavy.
Swing on down to the Great Clips?
Probably Floyd's, or if I'm really unhappy, I might just be lazy and go to the Supercut on the corner.
Mm.
I hate that place.
A lot of the places you go to are for laziness purposes. Proximity.
Yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Like you're some sort of a saint that you go the extra mile.
Well, literally. I literally have to go an extra mile anytime I want to go anywhere, so I have to sort of make up my mind ahead of time. I can't just, you know, I'll just run across the street and get my turkey bacon avocado sandwich.
Oh, no, it's not across the street. That's actually a drive.
Got to go out of your way to get that one.
Yeah, and I went out of my way to get today's beverage.
Which is?
Beet, apple, carrot, lemon, ginger. Cold press, raw organic juice.
Are you just using the bionic name generator for beverages?
No, man, what would that be? Backlog? Who's named Backlog?
I'm sure someone is.
But speaking of bionic...
It's a very sad week.
Yeah.
No more bionic.
Sad week. Huge sad week. No, but yeah. So lame. And and also canceling all of Mike's 5x5 shows.
Yes.
For those who... I think most of the people who follow me probably know that I like listening to the Mike Hurley podcasts and especially the Bionic podcast with Matthew Alexander, and you also feel similarly. So it's just really sad.
Yeah, it was sad. They had their last episode last week in which they were very nice to say nice things about us. There is a hole in my podcasting app now that they have stopped. So I've gone back to episode 51 and started listening again.
That's real commitment.
Yeah, I'm all the way up to 56.
I'm not doing that at all. No. But,
well, you don't like listening to old podcasts. I don't know why. You're a weirdo.
Well, no, I mean, like old, like a week old maybe, or if I'm trying to like catch up on something. But I'm not really one to go back and re-listen to things. Although when I was doing the blog post on my little farewell to Bionic, I went back and I listened to... bits and pieces of a few of my favorites while I was writing it up. It made me sad that it was gone. But yeah, it's still a great show, and it's evergreen because they honestly never talked about anything.
it's so great. I took some convincing. I think I started like last year or something. You gave me a list of like 8 things to like, oh, start here. Here's 8 episodes. I was like, oh, whatever. And I had a bunch of yard work because I think I was unemployed for a month or so I just put it on while I was doing yard work, and it's like, oh, this is fantastic. So I just went back to 51 and went from there and followed them all the way through to the end, and now I'm doing it again because I miss it. I do really wish I would have been around back then. Actually, it's probably great that I wasn't listening live all the way since 51, because my life would have been consumed by making ridiculous fan art.
Yeah, that's the downside to it, really.
No, it's not a downside. It sounds like so much fun. I want to like tweet all of these fun inside jokes at them now, but it's a year and a half old, and they would just think I'm a crazy person.
I think they'd be okay with that. it's one of those things where it's like it's so hard to explain to other people because it's offbeat. Speaking of beets, this juice does actually taste like beets.
Oh god, beets are disgusting. That tastes like dirt.
Yeah, so it's kind of like dirt juice.
Do you like to punish yourself with these beverages, or do you genuinely like the taste of these strange things?
Well, sometimes there's a good flavor to it. Hey. It's just kind of, this one in particular just really does taste like beets and ginger.
I'm not a fan of beets.
Yeah, I mean, it's got stuff in it, and it's good for you. So that's great. Although I didn't notice at the time I bought it that on the labeling for it, there is a manifesto, as in manifesto, but with fresh in it. And it's a registered trademark, by the way. So make sure you don't actually use manifesto yourself. But yeah. Can I just read this to you for a second? We'll cut all this out.
Sure.
We swear to give you the juice, the whole juice, and nothing but the juice. Oh, these are the simple rules we live by. 1, the freshest fruits and vegetables make the best juice. Keep me cold. 2, juice should never be cooked. Cooking juice reduces vitamins and live enzymes. Even flash pasteurized means cooked. 3, don't have separation anxiety. Only additives can prevent the natural settling process. And who wants to drink additives? Stop staring and give me a little shake. Literally says that. 4, treat your body right. Drinking the raw juice and eating real food is a smart long-term strategy for maintaining good health. We think you drink, registered trademark again, blueprint.com. God, this is, I don't know, maybe too, did I go overboard on the pretentious stuff? Is this too far for me?
It's fine, the beverage aside. I mean, it gives me the same feeling I get when I watch most TV commercials these days, which is that somebody got paid to make that, and I wasn't able to insert myself into that situation and say, you should stop and let me help you. I really want to help you make better ad copy, TV commercials, whatever it may be. Just let me help you. I don't know why we need to go through this embarrassing display of whatever the hell that was that you just read. You know, most of the things I see, and I'm not saying that I have, you know, infinitely better taste than everyone I see, but there are so many commercials that are just fall down on your face stupid that it's like, please let me help you. You don't really want to say that to your audience, do you?
No, especially not, well, they do have one pun on here. So they have that terrible portmanteau they've registered. And they have another pun that says upbeat. B-E-E-T.
I mean, you know.
I mean, I'm one who likes my terrible puns, but you guys, come on.
I suppose we don't, with every product, we don't have to be buying into a brand when we buy a product, but I think we're so used to it in the technology world. You can't ally yourself with this brand who has such terrible puns and copy on their product.
A brand is a promise.
Stop saying that. I don't even know what that means. Oh, man.
Okay.
It's very humid here. Very, very humid.
God, yeah, it's really strange. It's humid here, too. And theoretically, we'll have a thunderstorm today.
No, supposedly. We've been getting pounded by wind and rain for the past couple days.
Pounded?
Pounded. Literally pounded.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No, well, we haven't had any. I mean, you know, California drought. Yay! Yeah, but it's
only been for the past, like, 8 years, right?
Yeah, and I'm sure the thunderstorm they're predicting is just going to be, like, maybe a light drizzle tonight sometime. But yeah, it's very humid, and I don't know why. It's like almost Florida humid.
Yeah, I think it was like 61%. But aside from being overcast, I blacked out one of the windows in my bedroom this weekend so I could finally sleep. And as usual, I overslept a ton this weekend, which was great because I haven't slept a whole lot in the past couple of weeks.
Work. Yeah, but I don't think that blacking out your windows and then just sleeping randomly in a large chunk and then going back to everything you were doing before really like a good long-term solution.
No, not at all. It was an unintended consequence. I remember I did this last time because years ago I experimented with the blacking out the windows in the bedroom to see how it would affect me. And I think the first time I did it, I inadvertently slept for like 17 hours, which was not the case this time, but it was certainly more than normal. It's nice. I like sleeping in a little black cave.
Hmm. Okay.
I also joined a gym too, so I'm on both ends of the spectrum in terms of laziness and getting out of my house.
I have a gym membership to a gym that is a block and a half from my apartment. Do you know how often I've gone?
I'm gonna go with zero.
No, it's more than zero.
Not one?
Less than the number of fingers you have on your hand, but more than zero.
Are we talking Princess Bride hands or regular hands?
Regular hands.
Regular hands.
I would have qualified that with Princess Bride hands.
Hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, predicting that I would have similar problems, I joined one of those 24-hour gyms that have no staff, so you can just sort of like swipe a little card and go inside whenever you feel like it.
Uh-huh.
Because, yeah, I'm, you know, awake at all hours of the evening, and I don't like people. So I can go whenever I want.
But you're not... Have you gone yet?
Oh, I mean, I only signed up like 2 days ago, but no.
Well, so you signed up, and it's been 2 days, and you haven't gone once.
It was the weekend.
Did you sign up and not even exercise, or was it one of those sign-ups where you go in to exercise on your free trial and then sign up at the end of it?
To be honest, I was out to lunch, and they closed in like 15 minutes, and I'd been putting off signing up for a while, and I was literally driving right past it, so I just swerved in there, hit the brakes real fast, ran in and signed the papers, and ran back out right before the guy who does the sign-ups left.
So you were out eating.
Yes.
Late in the afternoon.
And clearly I felt guilty about what I had just eaten.
Uh-huh, which was?
Oh, gosh. Probably a burrito. I don't remember.
Shame burrito.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, it all adds up now.
Oh, God. As I was coming home from that lunch, I noticed there's a new coffee shop in Ahwatukee. And it's
I'm sorry, God bless you?
Yes, Ahwatukee is where I live. Its name is a hashtag. I saw it, and it broke my brain because the stupid. And I was just dumbfounded. But yeah, we apparently have a new coffee shop I guess they're trying to be fancy or whatever. They're buying Intelligentsia beans if their website is to be believed. Which, by the way, their website is a Blogspot site. Which doesn't inspire tons of confidence, but they're
that's better than a Facebook page.
Debatable. Their name is hashtag where the letter U bean. One word, where you bean.
Okay, so
hashtag where you bean.
I'm gonna need you to go by there and tell them not to do that anymore.
No, I looked at their website, which is awful, and they linked to their Twitter account, and one of their Twitter posts is about a new product on their menu, and it's hashtag where letter U pudding, one word. Hashtag where you pudding, now on the menu, is in their Twitter feed, and it's a mason jar full of like banana pudding.
What? This is a coffee shop that sells mason jars full of banana pudding?
And pastries and things, yes. This is my reaction as I was driving by in this, like, mostly dead, strip mall area. I see hashtag where you bean coffee on the side of a building, and I couldn't even bring myself to have a reaction. I was just stupefied. And clearly my instincts were correct, because these people are insane. But if they're, if they've somehow managed to get Intelligentsia beans into there and they don't ruin it, then maybe I'll go there. Because, there aren't a whole lot of other options around here.
Well, Dan, they sell Intelligentsia beans at lots of places.
Not around here, my friend.
Yes, they do. When I was in your neck of the woods, I even sent you a photo of a grocery store chain that carries it there, whatever that was called.
I don't recall this.
The one, the one that looks like Bristol Farms, but it's not Bristol Farms on the inside. What was the name of that one?
Oh, Sprouts?
Mm-mm.
Whole Foods? Trader Joe's? I don't know. We don't have
a
Whole Foods.
No, it was like owned by the lesser chain.
Fresh and Easy?
No.
No.
It's some local thing that only you have there in Phoenix.
Oh, AJ's?
No.
I've exhausted every grocery store chain that I
know. No, there's like another... Oh, God damn it. I might have to do I might have to Google everything myself.
Is this what our show is about now?
Yes. I have to remember what the hell it was.
No wonder we're getting one-star reviews now.
Oh, God.
Oh, wait, no. That's just because we don't like Firefly.
Yeah, well...
Or I should say, you don't like Firefly, and I have no inclination to watch it.
Well, I think that's saying exactly the same thing. But the what was it?
Did you find the grocery store chain yet?
It's owned by that place that starts with a B, Bauhaus or whatever it is, Bonus, whatever.
I have no idea what you're saying right now.
Bosch's. It's owned by them.
Bash's?
It's owned by them, it's but Bash's. It's not them. Oh, Bash's. It's spelled like Bauhaus, but with like a missing U.
The guy's name is Eddie Bash, and it's his grocery store chain. It's one of the oldest ones around here.
Yeah, well, they own this other smaller chain. We're cutting all of this out.
It's a good thing our endorsements on other podcasts have nearly quadrupled our listenership, because this is the sort of high quality audio they can expect from now on.
Yeah, well, can we seriously just cut all this out? Oh, it's a I guess it is AJ's Fine Foods.
Yeah, see, told you. Wait, Bash's owns AJ's?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I looked it up online after we left, because I thought for sure that Bristol Farms owned them, because it seemed very Bristol Farms-y on the inside.
Yeah.
And I know that Albertsons used to own Bristol Farms. Anyway, they have Intelligentsia. Also, I was walking through a Target and they had Intelligentsia in there.
Tell you, I'm sorry. Stop. Back up. What Target has
Target? Target, as in the chain Target. Yes. Quote unquote department store.
They had somebody there making this coffee, or just selling the beans?
No, just selling the beans.
All
I'm talking about is beans. Because aren't you going to like AeroPress everything yourself from scratch? Inverted AeroPress it?
I don't invert the AeroPress.
Okay, I don't know. I don't own an AeroPress. As we've established, I have Coffee.
This is the difference, because the drip style coffee that you're used to with these goofy contraptions or whatever the hell. What was the name of that thing that you have?
A Kalamazoo? I don't have it. The Technivorm?
Sure, Technivorm.
That's not mine. I would never consent to buy a $300, like, ridiculous coffee maker. God.
$300 for a ridiculous drip coffee maker, whereas $27 can buy you an AeroPress that makes better, stronger, delicious coffee.
Well, have you had coffee from a Technivorm?
I have no desire to drink coffee from a Technivorm, because it's drip coffee and I don't drink drip coffee.
Okay. Sounds like somebody's got some problems.
No, it's just that, like, I don't know, that... We're not going to talk about. We're not going to talk about coffee. Some people like coffee because they like the taste of it and they want to have 6 cups in a day. I want to have one measured strong cup of coffee in the morning and then go about my business. That's just, you know. Anyway.
Well, speaking of coffee, there was something on ATP that I just was wanting to follow up on that I happened to be listening to when they were discussing 4K stuff. Did you listen to that one?
I believe I heard that. I did the thing where I sort of intentionally tune out people talking about movie stuff because it makes me want to bang my head against the wall. But yeah, I briefly heard it. I can't remember exactly what they were saying, but go ahead.
Yeah, well, all I just want to say is every time I hear anybody talk about 4K TVs, it's always about the technical aspects of having a 4K TV and never about the fact that there's no content. and they go so far as to, you know, of course, the only one that's out there that's going to provide anything right now is sometimes maybe Netflix, kind of maybe some streams. But eventually that'll expand. But at the same time, they're going to be like pretty much every movie ever that has special effects in it does not have 4K special effects inside of the movie. So I just wanted to point out that there just aren't enough pixels in everything that's ever been made for...
No, that is a great point.
Everything to be 4K?
I don't think people understand. Yeah, in particular, you know, most of the movies that people watch are 2K. I think for big feature films, you know, the VFX pipelines in a lot of places are still 2K. They're starting to move up to 4K. In very rare instances, they're, you know, 6 and 8K for some of the reusable assets. What was the big movie a couple years ago that they did a bunch of the post-work in 6 and 8K? I want to say, no, it wasn't Dark Knight. No, maybe it was Dark Knight with the IMAX material. Didn't they process that stuff at 6K?
Oh, I think, but wasn't that only for like some of the?
Oh yeah, absolutely. It was only for a few of the shots. I think in particular it was the semi flipping over in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
That stuff was done at 6K, but yeah, the majority of stuff is still done 2K. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, the problem, just as it was with HDTVs, is there is no 4K content to display. Oh God, 4K. You know, I used to be one of those guys who was all about the utmost pristine image quality, and I would like break my back to, you know, when we would shoot something in 4K, I would make 4K TIFF sequences out of it for the edit to color correct, and then make sure I exported a 4K QuickTime file, or my master file would be a 4K TIFF sequence that would then get down converted to everything else, because I was, you know, super into that. And as years have gone by, most of the things I deliver now are 1080 for the web, which is fine. I don't know if that'll change when Retina comes to the desktop, but...
Well, that seems to be on a slow incline.
In all honesty, Retina displays for computers will probably be a bigger driving force for 4K content than anything on your TV.
Yeah, because it's much closer to you in terms of viewing distance. But, I mean, when are we going to see, like, the 4K Apple IMAX? I don't see that being this year, but who knows? Maybe they're on some accelerated curve. But even then, I can't imagine that even with something like that, and even with a desire for sharper movies or something where they start pushing out even higher res stuff, I can't imagine that it's going to actually be that great if we're still going to have, like, every time there's a VFX shot in a movie, then it's still just going to be a 2K up-res. Because we're dealing with movies that are, like, you know, hundreds and hundreds of shots of VFX work, like even little tiny things and background extensions and stuff like that, like all the little invisible effects that people don't notice, it still makes it an effects shot, which still means that it's at 2K, which still means the whole shot's in 2K.
I don't know why we're talking about this. Talk more about coffee and hashtags
and beet juice. God, this is going to be a slog to get through this beet juice.
Yeah, we should talk about this fantastic animated gif of you.
I'm sorry, what?
This wonderful animated gif of you really excitedly drinking a beverage.
the one that Jeff made?
Yeah, this is so great. It's one of everyone's favorite animated gifs of Jonah Hill really excitedly shaking his hands next to his face. He's pasted your Twitter avatar over top of his face. Mm-hmm. Oh my god, and I love the fact that he's still got the straw of you drinking your Coke.
Well, I think that's just because he just made a big oval to cut out
the it doesn't the matter image. It makes it so much better.
Okay.
Just uh-huh. That look on your face. Oh god.
Mm-hmm.
I could stare at this for hours. It's just been looping in my browser for a while I was waiting for you to connect.
That's strange.
I think it's fantastic.
Thanks.
Yeah. Oh, another thing just popped up in my Twitter feed right before we were going live. Somebody linked to an article. Apparently in the new Planet of the Apes movie, there's one particular VFX shot that went through 1,000 revisions before final. Talk about all the version tracking we were talking about in the last show.
Mm.
God, can you imagine that? Can you imagine doing 1,000 versions of one shot?
No, I've never hit that number. I have gone over, I think, 200 one time.
Oh my god, are you kidding me?
But I didn't start the shot.
I hit 28 this week on a shot, and I wanted to pull my hair out.
Yeah, no, I've done more than 28. Well, because sometimes, you know, you'll have those situations where it's like, show me 3 or 4 alts of this, and so then that you'll very quickly move through versions if you're spitting out like alternate passes of things, like, oh, this one's 2% more blue and this one's, you know, a stop up and whatever. So I can see how you can accumulate versions quickly, but I have no idea how someone would get to 1,000. That's amazing.
Yeah, I guess it was a particularly difficult shot. They said they were working on it for about a year for one shot.
Yeah, sounds about right.
That sounds miserable is what it sounds like.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure it's a great shot, though.
Yes. It'll be great for their demo reel. Kudos to them.
Yep. Speaking of visual effects news, should we get serious for a moment?
What's the serious part?
This Pixar bullshit.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Ed.
Good old Ed Catmull. Now, the reason I wanted to talk about this with you in particular is to see if we could try and figure out from anyone's perspective why this could have been looked at as a reasonable thing to do, and he didn't. I mean, because Ed Catmull is a smart man. clearly. Why did he think this was a reasonable thing to do with his competitors?
Well, let's just recap it first, in case anybody hadn't seen it. Pando Daily, the sort of crass yellow journalism site, came out with a series of recent posts where they were rifling through the court documents in the wage-fixing scandal that has involved, like, tons of companies, Adobe, Apple, Pixar, ILM.
Let's call it an anti-poaching agreement, because wage-fixing is more of just a tangent related to the anti-poaching.
Well, I mean, that's sort of the result of it. Okay, so, yeah, it's an agreement not to... not to take each other's employees, that they would just stay at a company. And it was an agreement between these companies, a gentleman's agreement. So, you know, there's going to be a settlement, and Pando went through these documents and they found all this stuff from Catmull's testimony, which is really very not flattering for him. Where, a certain part of it discusses how he went down to my former employer, Sony Pictures Imageworks, and apparently talked to producers there about trying to get them into the wage-fixing thing, and that they wouldn't go along with it, with the anti-poaching agreement. So it's just all kinds of strange. I mean, those producers aren't at Sony anymore, and like, the whole company has changed since then, and I never knew anything about it when I was working there. And I did work on a few of the Sony Pictures animated movies while I was there, but, you know, I was never poached or anything, nor was I poached from somewhere else to go there. So I have no involvement in any of the things discussed in the case. It's just so strange to read it.
Well, technically you do, because you were there at the time. And I should disclaim that apparently this affects both of us, because I did work for Intel at the time that this anti-poaching came about, and I had an opportunity to be part of the class action lawsuit, which I declined. But it's the anti-poaching thing. I'm trying to put myself in someone's shoes, especially Catmull, at this time, trying to figure out why they would think this is a great idea. And I guess, you know, in particular, companies like Apple and Pixar, they value their teams, and they, you know, once they have a good, high-functioning team, they want to keep them together, is my assumption, and they want these people to build off of the synergy that they've created or whatever, but just to stick around and to have the same creative people working over and over again and iterate on their development process to make better movies going forward. And I can understand the desire to keep your team together, but going to these other companies and saying, don't steal our employees, we won't steal yours, I mean, that makes sense on the grounds that we all want to keep our teams together and have a growing industry. But the side effect is, as you mentioned, wage fixing, because, you know, people would lure other people away from the company by offering them a better position or better pay or better benefits. And by agreeing not to do this, it stagnates the pay and the benefits for all of the employees in an industry that's already screwed up. So it's kind of, you know, there's no way they didn't realize that's what they were doing. And I'm just trying to figure out why they thought this was an okay thing to do in light of the fact that they must have known that they were basically screwing the industry.
Well, if nobody ever knew about it, then it wouldn't ever really matter.
There's nothing really in these court documents that explains why Catmull thought this was a good idea, other than they didn't want to break apart their teams and have them stolen away or stolen back, because, you know, Sony, basically what happened, according to the documents, is that Sony was starting their animation business, and they needed people, because they were brand new, and they wanted to get people from some of the best places, so obviously Pixar, I'm sure a lot of other studios, they were courting talent from, and Pixar didn't want their people raided. I mean, he called it an anti-raid agreement, which I think is a little hyperbolic, to say Sony was going to come in and raid their employees and take all of them, or whatever his thought process was, but
well, one time I was at Sony and someone did cold call my work line from another company, a recruiter, to try and hire me over my work number, which was fascinating to me. Not only ever happened one time, but you know, it does happen with apparently used to go through directories and see people's names on certain projects and then try and get them off.
Hmm. That's interesting. Is this really just a symptom of the visual effects industry? Because, I mean, cold calling crew members, in like the freelance world, I will cold call a key grip that I've heard through another grip that is really good at their job and say, for the next gig, you should hire this guy because he knows what he's doing. Or, that's how you get relations. That's how you build relationships and you build a group of people that you trust for production. I mean, is this really... in the freelance world, we really rely on referrals or word of mouth from other employees to say this guy's great at his job. You should hire him for the next one. And maybe that's where this sort of started from. The people looking for other talent. And, I mean, that's a natural thing to do. That's the only real way that I know to expand the scope of your work and the people you work with is referral through word of mouth when you do good work. But when you're working with a large company of employees and that company wants to be a company, they don't want to be a large building full of freelancers. They, to a certain extent, I think Pixar likes their employees. They treat their employees very nicely, and they want to keep them. They want to keep them happy.
But they also want to keep costs down.
Well, yeah, obviously. I mean,
if it was really about liking them and wanting to keep them, then it would also be about countering offers for them to go somewhere else.
Right, but and maybe it's that Sony being a brand new studio, they had zero people, they had a lot of capital because they're Sony, and they could offer ridiculous wages that Pixar couldn't compete with, and they really wanted to sort of create sort of this gentleman's agreement that even if they were trying to lure people away with ridiculous salaries, that ridiculous salary wasn't sustainable for them or anyone in the industry, and they were trying to be reasonable in that regard. But the way it turns out is he was just trying to shut down competition, and that is not a good thing.
Right, which is why it's not reasonable. And, while it doesn't directly affect me because I wasn't in a situation where I was lured away from Pixar to go work at Sony or anything, I was already there and I wasn't lured away to go work somewhere else. That agreement being in place would have a larger effect on the industry as a whole. Someone on Twitter, I can't remember the name, replied back to me when I was tweeting about how this blows. They said, oh, well, it's mostly just engineers. And I'm like, well, no, because Jill Colton, the director that was lured away, the one that Ed had some not nice things to say in his email that he sent to Steve Jobs, she was not a technical person. She was a story person. She was a director and went on to direct a part of Open Season. She was one of three directors on that project. I think she was originally supposed to be the sole director.
Yeah, and there were other instances in this document. They were talking about managers of animation staff were lured away, and they were talking about somebody else who could be brought up in the ranks to manage that group, but they weren't quite ready yet. And I think they were scared that the key people in charge of maintaining the Pixar way, their development process, were going to be lured away, or were lured away in some instances. And that probably scared them because, as well as I do that the artists are not per se interchangeable, but I think the people who were more key to the Pixar development process are the ones they were scared about. And maybe that's on them to make sure that development process can exist with changing staff. I don't know, because, I've never really been inside Pixar, but...
I think this is all just glossing over the... Like, saying, oh, well, they didn't want them to get pulled away is bullshit, because... I'm going to say this flatly, like, that is BS, because if they really did want to keep them there, then it would have just been a matter of countering the offers. Like, if they were really that happy with the company, if whoever it was, the artist or engineer or story person or whatever, if they were really happy at that company, then it would have been a matter of just countering an offer. So in that case, either they weren't happy with the company and wanted to go somewhere else, or they weren't, or they were happier with the amount of money they were being offered to go somewhere else.
Right. There's no way. I'm not trying at all to defend what they're doing. I'm just trying to see what they thought. And maybe they thought that Sony's offers to pull them away were ridiculous because Sony was brand new and they had to do what they had to do to get these people. But you're correct that they could have just countered with any offer, even if their offer wasn't as good as Sony's. I mean, everyone has talked about this work culture. It's more than just the paycheck. If people really enjoy the company they're working with, and by all appearances, people really love working at Pixar because it's a great company. But, if all it takes is somebody offering a little bit more money from Sony, maybe that's not what's going on here. And it's, again, it all comes back to, they had to know that the secondary effect of doing this is that it is essentially going to stagnate pay and benefits for the visual effects industry, which is terrible because I don't know how many people are aware, but it's already pretty bad. And this idea that they're going to keep their company together to benefit themselves so they can prosper in the future is at the cost of damning the industry as a whole, which is far worse than just benefiting a single company.
Yeah, but also
they're
going
to feel that later.
Yes, but also keep in mind the time scale. These emails were from 2002, 2004, 2007, I think was the other email. All the court documents stuff is from that time frame. Like, this was going on for like a decade. This isn't when the industry was still technically thriving. There was not the tax subsidy battle that has been going on like the last 5 or 6 years. Like, that this is predates even that.
Yeah. It's astounding how quickly the industry grew in that period of time in spite of all of this sort of wage fixing.
Yeah, and so, you know, it's not a recent thing. And that its effects long term could have been responsible for a lot of the devastating effects we see now, but that's conjecture, because I would have no idea what the projections are on, like, wages or anything if people had been allowed to be recruited. I mean, and it's not just Sony, though. Another example in the court documents was Image Movers Digital, which was a company that was started from scratch by Zemeckis and Disney, and it was supposed to be his own private visual effects studio to make his performance capture films for Christmas Carol and Mars Needs Moms, and they were shuttered by Disney before Mars Needs Moms even finished. They started letting people go, and you come to see inside of these documents that when Pixar was acquired by Disney, Catmull put pressure on Disney to do something to Image Movers Digital because they were not respecting the no poaching agreements, the anti-raid agreements. So that's also terrible. And the Disney executive, Dick Cook, was like, oh yeah, that's really bad. So, I mean, these court documents, not good. These emails with Steve Jobs and Ed Catmull, not good.
Yeah. And as much as I like to try and find, try and give people the benefit of the doubt, it really seems like Catmull is using his position of power to sort of hold the industry down and just, you know, I can't say it seems like he was doing it out of fear for his own company. It seems like he was genuinely doing this to maintain a competitive advantage at the expense of the employees who worked for him, which is quite unfortunate.
Yes, and it's especially ironic and cruel in light of his recently released autobiography, Creativity Inc.,
yeah.
Which has received many glowing reviews. There was a whole panel discussion about it on The Incomparable with John Siracusa and Jason Snell and Glenn Fleischman and a bunch of people, and they were all talking about how great Pixar's ethic is, and John kept pointing out, you know, they're not afraid of their failures. And I, of course, can't help but point out that nowhere in there did Ed Catmull discuss any of this fixing as part of his failure. That was completely ignored.
Well, it's probably because it was illegal.
Yeah, I know. But see, that's the thing. It's like it makes it really hard to believe, to buy into, like, the great Ed Catmull mythos if you have these horrible things that he said about suppressing the people that work for him. His business management is not as good as his technical prowess.
Yeah.
It's really damaging, I think, that they have been able to manipulate not just things for their own employees, but manipulate things across multiple companies, and not just for people that do technical work, and not just for people that do not just for people that do artistic work, and not just for people that do the storyboards and the script writing. I mean, it really kind of impacts a lot of things, and that's depressing.
Yeah, I mean, the line in particular that really just sticks out to me, and it's looking, I'm looking at it right now, is bad long-term consequences, i.e. higher benefits for employees, lower profits for companies and executives. And that's just, it flies in the face of everything we've known about Pixar and the reason that they do things the way they do. I mean, originally they started so they could do things their way, you know? They would throw movies out and start over because they could, and they cared about the products, and they cared about the process of making movies. And that line seems to indicate that it was as much about profit as it was about making a good movie, which is unfortunate.
Yeah. All right, let's move on to something happier. This is really depressing the hell out of me.
Did you see the Emmy nominations came out, by the way?
I didn't pay any attention to it. Yeah. I heard that a lot of the streaming-only, quote-unquote, television productions received awards this year, so that's interesting.
Yeah, House of Cards is in there again. I got to say, I'm rooting for True Detective across the board. God, it must have been one of those weekends where HBO is doing like free HBO for people who have connected boxes or whatever, because they showed the first two episodes of True Detective over and over again, and I watched them. And God, they sucked me right back in. Like the first time I watched them, the show was just so damn good.
I haven't seen it.
Oh, you're killing me. You got to go watch it. Yeah, but after the weekend of very serious television, for some reason I was flipping around last night and Beer Fest was on, and I watched, and I told you, I forgot how funny that movie was, and the whole Broken Lizard crew we were talking about. Yeah,
and I don't like Beer Fest that much.
The biggest thing I can say about Beer Fest is that it has forever changed the connotation of AC/DC Have a Drink on Me for me. Because every time I hear that song, I just picture that the Beer Games montage toward the end of the movie there, where they're getting into it with the German team. And it always just makes me want to drink beer when I hear that song, particularly because of that movie. And that's as high a compliment as I can give to any filmmaker.
Das Boot.
Das Boot.
No, I really didn't like it very much. And I was really disappointed because I loved Super Troopers when it came out. In my college dorm, we would just basically just watch Super Troopers a whole hell of a lot, and because it was hilarious, and you could walk in on it or walk out of it whenever you needed to, because it wasn't really about the plot or the story. It was just amazing little sketchy writing, like vignettes of funny moments with these terrific one-liners and stuff like that. Like, it was just a very funny script. But when I heard that Club Dread had come out and that it was a flop, I was really kind of put off by that, and I didn't see that one. And then when Beer Fest came out, I was really reticent to see that too, because it got really terrible reviews, and a friend of mine that I worked with was like, oh no, you have to watch it, like it's gonna be so good, here, I'll let you borrow my DVD of it. And so I watched Beer Fest at the time. I think it was like 2007 or something. And I was just mortified that it wasn't as good as Super Troopers. It was really dumb. A lot of it was, instead of it being so dumb, it's stupid. It was just dumb, which I found really off-putting. Yeah,
but you know, I thought Beer Fest was a fun movie. It wasn't as good as Super Troopers, but I didn't really remember. I remember them both being fun. And when you started saying how much more you liked Super Troopers, and I vaguely remember really liking Super Troopers a whole hell of a lot, I went back and I watched Super Troopers, and you are right. Every scene, every line of that movie is quotable and hilarious, and It's such a lean movie that's so well executed that you can just watch it over and over and over again and never get tired of it.
Yeah, I mean, they had like no budget to make this thing, and it's very evident.
It was $1.2 million for Super Troopers, and it took a really long time to make. But you know, I think it grossed like 30 something back, which is, you know, pretty modest comparatively, but for a $1 million budget for these independent guys that no one's ever heard of, mm-hmm. It's fantastic.
Yeah, that's 30 times better. But yeah, and not to say nothing of like the cult following of people that, you know, bought DVDs and Blu-rays and paid for the digital download versions or whatever. It's a fantastic film that has a huge cult following, because it's hilarious. And I just don't get the same thing out of Beerfest, and it really bugged me. Like, I think it was maybe if I had seen Beerfest without having seen Super Troopers, maybe if I wasn't like expecting it to live up to that level, then maybe it would have been an okay movie. But the fact that it wasn't as good as Super Troopers depressed me.
I mean, how many movies really live up to Super Troopers? It's like this low-budget indie that is just... I mean, the only way I can describe it is it's so lean in that every little ounce of it is just so fantastic. It's almost a perfect movie. I mean, it's not a perfect movie in the sense that the plot delivers on everything that it promises.
Oh, no, the plot's kind of every dumb. Ounce of
it. The plot is really dumb, but every bit of it is hilarious. Like, every one of these lines is something that somebody has quoted, and, you know... It's got great actors. Like, the biggest thing that I realized when I was watching this again is how hard the Broken Lizard guys committed to these roles. Like, after I saw this, one of the reasons that all of the other movies were so difficult to watch is because I keep calling these guys by their character names from Super Troopers. Like, they will never be... he'll never be Paul Soder. He'll always be Foster. Like, in my mind, I cannot divorce them from this character. And especially, you know, Farva. Where have we seen him in, you know, tons of other movies? But he's always going to be Farva. I mean, these guys...
Oh, he has a name. It's Kevin Heffernan.
I know, but he's Farva.
Like, I know.
These guys committed so hard to these roles, and they sold them so well that they are forever those guys. And, mm-hmm. you know, whether they started with Super Troopers or some other movie, like, these guys are these roles. And, you know, I'm not trying to say that they'll never live up to it again, but it's such a fan favorite for me and clearly so many other people that this, oh God, I could watch this movie on loop. I was watching it again right before we talked on today, right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
every
too.
Line, you know, biker. I'm an idiot.
The snozzberries taste like snozzberries.
That guy's married to Christina Hendricks, by the way.
Yeah, I know. That's so strange.
So strange.
I saw them on a Top Chef episode together. It was peculiar. but yeah, I mean, this you could go on forever quoting this stuff. You know, liter of cola.
Yeah, liter of cola. Yes. Mm-hmm. And the one thing I was thinking before I rewatched it is. I don't know. It seems like this brand of comedy has sort of died down a little bit since, you know, the 2000s or the early 2000s, I guess, when this came out. And it was sort of their world to play in and, you know, kind of the Jackass world. I don't really want to lump those two. I mean, I guess Chandrasekhar has worked on some of the Jackass stuff. He was in, which movie was that? Was that the first Jackass movie? Anyway, but I don't know. I think, you know, things have gotten more serious, especially on TV these days. But I don't know. I kind of feel like we've lost something. This sort of genre of silly comedies has, and it's not really disappeared, but it's kind of become a stereotype, and there's nobody really doing anything like this that's new and interesting.
Well, the only thing is they apparently think they are making the other Broken Lizard movies like these, but I like I said,
well, apparently there's a Super Troopers 2 on the production schedule.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's still in development, quote unquote, and I think it has been for a great many years, because it was supposed to be like a, if I read correctly, supposed to be a prequel of the Super Troopers guy's dad's in the 70s?
No, burn it down. I don't want that. I don't want that.
I don't know. No. They should do it just like they did in Beerfest, where that was one of my favorite moments in Beerfest, where Kevin Heffernan's character dies, and then his twin brother that has not been in the story up until now shows up and just takes his place and asks to be called by the same name. And then you just completely forget the fact that one of the characters died because he just stepped into the role.
I hated that.
Oh, it was so great.
No, I hated it so much. I hated it so much. It made me so angry.
It was so funny.
No, it wasn't funny. It was.
Did you see that coming?
No, I didn't see it coming because it was stupid.
It was not stupid. It was hilarious.
But it that was really stupid. Like, it was. And it's not, like, stupid funny, like, oh, look how crazy and daring this is. It's like, they wrote this wacky thing to happen, and they're like, well, what do we do? I don't know, just bring him back. And it's like, well, no.
that's so exactly their brand of comedy, though, and I thought it worked perfectly.
No. I like Super Troopers because it's heightened, obviously. It's not real. But it's not heightened to the point where there are, like, crazy battles and a twin that you didn't know about comes in and just replaces somebody. Like, it's not that far off. Like, it's it's unrealistic that these events would happen, but it's not so unrealistic that it's inconceivable it could ever happen in the world, you know?
Yeah. Well, and then the other great thing about their brand of comedy is the straight people in the movies, like Cloris Leachman plays that so well, and you know, Brian Cox in Super Troopers.
Oh my God, Brian Cox is amazing. When he takes that soap, he just bites into it and snaps it off and spits it at him.
Yeah, like I was telling you, I watched the behind the scenes on this a bunch of times, and I think there's a couple good commentaries on it. But yeah, apparently it was white chocolate, and they did it like 8 times, and they were really concerned because Brian Cox is diabetic, and he was chewing on this bar of chocolate over and over again.
Mm-hmm. Well, he doesn't eat it; he spits it at him.
You're gonna get a fair amount in your mouth.
Yeah. title. But yeah, no, it's.
I'm drinking water. Don't.
Oh, you sure you weren't drinking syrup?
Oh God, that was so great. Oh, that's one of my other favorite parts, the behind the scenes. Like,
they didn't actually drink at least the half syrup, of
those,
did they?
Oh yes, in at least half of those takes they did that. And Rabbit's reaction where he does that little like weird face and sticks his tongue out and goes, "Wow!" Like that was his genuine reaction after chugging the last half of the bottle of syrup to make the end of the take look realistic. Because half of it was like iced tea, but they really tried doing the syrup and it was just too thick and they couldn't do it. But that take was real. So I love that moment so much more that I know that that reaction is genuine.
Oh God! Well, it is a good reaction. It is a good reaction, yeah.
Oh God. Yes. How many people have done that?
Done what?
The cat game.
Cat game?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Meow. And the repeater. I mean, all of these games, they've become so. They're part of the culture now.
Like,
oh, God, it's so great.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so glad this movie exists, is all I can say. And I can watch it over and over again.
And Linda Carter's in it.
Yes, briefly.
Yes.
Like, my favorite moments are like the parts that come out of this being like an indie movie. Like, in the beginning, where they're chasing the Miata, where they don't know that it's Mac dressed up mm-hmm. with the wig on. When he comes swerving around that corner and the camera's tracking, you can see a moment where like the car kind of jerks and there's a light flash because the cameraman thought the car was going to hit him and he jumped away from the lens. And I don't know, I mean, how many people know about film cameras, but if you don't cover up the eyepiece, light will come through the eyepiece and sort of flare the film for a moment. So you can see a little bit of light flare on the film because the cameraman had to literally jump out of the way because he thought he was going to die. Oh, God, that stuff makes me love the movie so much more.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. There's the one shot where he comes swerving around a corner and he does sort of like a double clutch on the turn, and it looks like he's coming right at the camera, and you can see a little flare as he jumps away from the eyepiece. And the fact that, you know, when they do that gag in the beginning where the cops drive away and then throw it in reverse and then pull the guys over again.
Yes.
Like, they did that 3 times and completely blew the transmission out of the car because their stuntman really wanted to spin the wheels. And it's like, it ruined that car.
What a shame.
Oh, it's so great, though. And then all of the cars they borrowed, like the Porsche and Farva's orange car, how they all the owners had no idea what they were getting into. So, like, when they dive over the orange car, like his belt buckle scraped the hell out of the hood and they had to replace that, and the owner was super angry. Mm-hmm. It's there's so many great stories of this being like an indie production that went through so many struggles and it came out the other side just beautiful.
Yeah. Oh well, and it's also I mean, it's definitely, I have to say though, it is an acquired taste to like something that is this it's definitely juvenile. Like, it's not. This isn't like the highest.
Didn't we
highbrow
start off the
comedy.
Show by talking about how much we love listening to Bionic?
Yeah, I know. No. But see, that's what I mean, though. Is like, this is a bunch of guys making like silly guy jokes, and you know the movie fails the Bechdel test. Like, the only women that are in it are love interests, so that's not great, and they don't talk to each other. That's also not great.
But, I would say Marissa holds her own in terms of comedy in this one.
Yeah, no. I'm not saying that any of them are bad. It's just that you can definitely see how it's more of a guy's movie than it is a broader audience movie.
Yeah, yeah. No, I agree. It fails the Bechdel test, but she's a pretty damn strong character. She kicks Farva's ass, in the brawl at the Winnebago. She's the last one standing. That's great.
Yes. Yeah, she kicks Foster's ass. Yeah. But, well, poor Foster. When she's like, oh, yeah, give me a punch, and then the ball comes out of nowhere. I was just like, oh, that's so horrible.
Oh god, there are so many great jokes. The more you watch it, the more you get. And especially, I gotta say, you gotta watch the commentaries too, because the writing is just, oh god, it's so great.
Mm-hmm.
And clearly the writing had other problems in Beer Fest. Like, I don't know if you remember, but in the very end where they do the double or nothing, the five boots versus five boots, they have this weird sort of like strange pose that they're doing while they're chugging their boots, because there's this weird cutout scene in the movie where they learned this special standing technique that allows you to drink beer faster, and thank god they cut it out of the movie because it would have been ridiculous. But you can still see them doing this weird sort of like I'm a little teapot pose while they're drinking their boots, and it's incredibly off-putting. So clearly that one had a little bit more script difficulties than Super Troopers, but you know.
Yeah,
no, I thought it was still fun.
I disagree. I think that, well, like, I want them to do well. It's not that I want them to never make anything again, because it will never be as good as Super Troopers. That's not how I feel. I want them to just be better than what they did in Beer Fest. That it could have been a lot better. Like, it could have just been more thoughtful. Could have, you know, like, it didn't have to be as spazzy and stupid. And I know Super Troopers is spazzy and stupid, but it still read as a little more coherent inside of the scenes they were in, because they weren't so crazily heightened to the like the 30th level that it took you out of whatever was happening.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, the straight characters play it super straight, and they do a lot of the times too. Like the first scene, I love the movie on repeat viewings because it's hilarious, but nothing can replace that feeling you get in the very first scene where they pull over the potheads and they have that dead serious look on their faces, and you've never seen these actors before in your life. And you're like, well, this is interesting. They're very straightforward cops. And then as the whole movie unfolds, you see that whole thing is just a ridiculous game. But, you know, they play it so well and so straight most of the time. Like I said, they committed to these roles so hard. It's great.
Yes. Yes. It's fantastic. And like I said earlier, the plot of this movie is not good. And I think that's actually kind of the thing, though, is that I think they tried to make the plot stronger in their subsequent attempts, like to actually have like more of a main story happening instead of just like random pulling people over vignettes. And I think that actually is what has hurt them, because they haven't been as strong at their main story stuff.
Well, I know a lot of the critics didn't particularly like the movie because of the lack of plot, but you know, I mean, Club Dread was pretty minimal on plot. They were just trying to do something more in the slasher film genre, and it didn't really jive super well with the comedy.
Mm-hmm.
It's got Bill Paxton in it, though.
Yes. I still haven't seen it.
He plays like a Jimmy Buffett style character.
Oh, that's fantastic.
He gets super angry when people confuse him with Jimmy Buffett, though. Somebody requests that he play Margaritaville, and he gets super angry, and because apparently his version of the song was called Pina Coladaberg. But it's Bill Paxton, so.
Mm-hmm. Well, does he have a version of Cheeseburger in Paradise?
I think he does, actually.
It's my favorite Jimmy Buffett song.
You have a favorite Jimmy Buffett song?
Yeah. I don't like any of the other ones. That was just the only... Because my dad used to play that one. Only that one.
my parents used to listen to one of his live CDs or greatest hits CDs or something over and over and over again as a child. And I, you know, I probably should have called CPS on them. But yeah, I have many, many Jimmy Buffett memories as a child.
Your parents are parrot heads?
No, they're not. They're so not. I don't know why that they thought this particular album was good. Like, they would put it on when friends were over or something. It's like, okay. And, you know, these songs are just part of my childhood now, which is probably one of the many reasons that I can't remember most of my childhood. But, yeah, I hear that stuff now, and it makes me feel 7 years old again, and I do not enjoy listening to Jimmy Buffett.
No, definitely not.
IMDb seems to think that since we like Super Troopers, we also like Harold and Kumar Go to White Castle.
I like Harold and Kumar Go to White Castle, but just the first one.
I do too. I was just testing you.
Okay. It was a test.
There was a test.
No, we're ending this podcast now.
No.
We'll never do another one again. No.
Although my family in Ohio hates me, because anytime we ever fly in, we drive past a White Castle on our way to my grandma's house, and I always make them pull over so I can get some, because we don't have White Castle here.
That's disgusting.
Oh, they're delicious.
That's disgusting.
They're delicious. They are not the same ones that you get at the grocery store. Don't let anyone tell you that.
little rat burger square things.
They're delicious. They got the pickles and the onions. They're delicious. Love them. I get like 7 of them.
Ugh. Ugh. No, I, you're on your own on that one. You failed that test.
And they got the crinkle fries. They're tasty.
Crinkle fries.
White Castle and crinkle fries right now.
Well, that's disgusting. Although, fortunately, I know for a fact that you're not going to drive that far. You'll
drive probably, to Ohio?
Yeah, you'll probably just make it as far as the nearest Chipotle.
Oh, God. No. Chipotle has a tofu option now.
Yeah, I saw that. They call it sofritas for some reason. So that escapes me.
Yeah.
But it doesn't make any sense because that's not what... Anyway, moving right along.
Oh, dear. I don't even know how we wrap this up. This is a ridiculous episode.
I know how we wrap it up. We talk about 4K again. Enhance. Enhance. Enhance.
Just print the goddamn thing! I wanna be doing the one summertime little love.